guys talked about after the consent agenda was the Southern Minnesota Initiative has applied for a grant from the state of Minnesota for Main Street revitalization, and they worked Northfield into this. How does this all?
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so we became aware of a program through the Department of Economic Development through the state of Minnesota for this Main Street revitalization. Cities weren't eligible applicants directly, so it really had to come from like a regional entity or nonprofit which focused on economic development efforts. And I won't get into the details, but in this part of the state, we don't have some of the kind of development groups that are typically maybe doing this kind of thing. So we identified Southern Minnesota Initiative Fund. We reached out to them to find out if they were pursuing this. And they said they're not soliciting anything, but that if there were communities looking at this, they were open to taking ideas for potential projects that they would basically take those ideas and potentially put in a grant application with a grouping of cities.
Right.
So they're looking at grants. The state program does allow guaranteed loan programs, but Southern Minnesota Initiative Fund said they're not in a position to be able to host these loans, so they were specifically taking grants. So the state grant program offered grants, individual grants up to $750,000 per project as a maximum. And they didn't have a limit. I don't have at my fingertips what the total was statewide available, but I want to say maybe somewhere in the $50 million range or something like that. Don't quote me on that because it's probably off.
We just did.
I guess I quoted myself.
I'll do some research before I write about that.
So it's probably not exactly right. I can pull it off later for you and submit it if you want it. But the some of the things that it's looking for are eligibility for private redevelopment. So the dollars have to go into private projects kind of in downtown to grow, to help small businesses maybe impacted by COVID-19 during the time period that arising since March 15th, 2020. It could also be from other things. So fires, natural disasters are also things that could be impacted, which we've had a fire right next door to here, the Archer House.
I remember that.
Yeah, and we we certainly know that there's interest in revitalizing that area and coming up with new development. And so we talked to the property owners. They were certainly interested. I think that helps the application for points because a lot of times if people are familiar with grants, they have scoring systems to determine who maybe ranks higher on projects. So we lost some business with that. We had some business relocations. We had job losses with that project. And so we're hoping to bring all of those things back and see new growth coming from that. We actually applied for $1 million. Still would be limited to $750,000. But it would also be eligible for other potential projects in our downtown area for redevelopment. So it keeps the door open that if we get funded, there could be other programs that we have to maybe achieve other city strategic priority goals that we may have.
Interesting. All right. Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, that is the organization, that foundation was started by former Congressman Tim Penny. Is that right? Yeah, he's been doing some good work since he left Congress many, many years ago. We also talked about, we're going to talk about this briefly because Councillor Susan Kazi is going to come on later to talk about this in a much more in-depth fashion, but there was a resolution of support for to use state general funds for a corridor study for regional passenger rail service, basically between Albert Lea and the Twin Cities, including Northfield, Noatown, and Faribault, and then points much further south as well.
Yep. That's right.
Okay.
You got that.
All right.
In a short synopsis, that's what it was.
Okay. And that resolution passed.
Yeah, it did. So this was really a reaffirmation of something that the city council has taken up previously, and it's still in process. Sometimes this is really big picture.
Yeah.
Connecting Minnesota to all the way down to the southern border of the U.S. is... That's a big picture, and it's not just unique to the city of Northfield.
Yeah.
And all the way up through the Twin Cities area there. So regional passenger rail, as Susie mentioned last night, and I'm so glad that you're going to have her on here, because this is an area that she is just so passionate about and has been working on with other cities and nationally within cities in Minnesota, but also nationally. So I'm just really grateful that you're going to give her that opportunity to talk about it.
It's going
to
be a good conversation.
As she said last night, I mean, it's good for the economy. Moving people efficiently is good for the environment, depending on what source you're utilizing. But this really is on existing rail lines. So it's not new rail lines. Mm-hmm. It's existing ones. And we're talking about moving people amongst our region. And we really don't have that in our little area here. Not to the extent that you could move people, get people from job to job or from home to job or from one college campus to another. Right. I mean, this just really opens up opportunities. And so she's been, Councilor Nakazian has really been championing this and been doing a great job with
it. She's got a lot to say about it, too. So we're really looking forward to this conversation. So after that, you folks adjourned the city council meeting and then quickly rearranged the whole room and came back and recongregated for a...
Reconvened.
That's what I'm looking for. My St. Olaf education almost at work there. had a little work session, which basically was one topic of conversation, but a pretty fascinating topic of conversation. This goes to the flood study. There are actually two different sections of this flood study that have been happening. Mm-hmm. One dealing with the river in downtown, which I think you're going to talk about next week. But this was residential properties that are in danger of flooding due to climate change and whatever, and some options for the city on how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is going back to an update to the surface water model. In 2020, the city did an update to the 1995 surface water model to Atlas 14. In Atlas 14, basically, they updated historical rain information at the federal level. And so we implemented that, which is we collect water in our citywide comprehensive stormwater management plan. It might mean that some of our infrastructure, as a result of that study, might need updating.
Sure.
It might be ponds. It might be the size of our stormwater pipes. It might be adding... collection at areas where we didn't see flooding before. So this is a follow-up to that, and it's probably also, as we look at our flooding hazard and climate resiliency goals adopted in 2019, the other thing that we are also trying to think about is not only looking at recent historical data, but also thinking about in the future. We're not quite there yet as far as modeling goes, but we're tracking how other communities are dealing with that. So this is an update to a prior work session that we held back in November.
Right.
And really looked at some public improvements to our infrastructure system. And then in cases where we weren't able to achieve, you know, some of the improvements to the collection system or drainage storage areas, we considered considerations related to individual private properties that may be impacted by stormwater onto their property. To see if we could offer some or explore further private improvements to properties. It could include acquisitions. It could of the city where maybe we'd clear the site. It could also be cases where we do modifications, where like floodproofing of basements or potentially modifying where a basement maybe isn't as usable in some cases. So we're looking at all those in pretty difficult conversations and tricky as it relates to how do you get in and deal with modifications of private homes with this. So a tricky topic, and that's why we moved to a work session table, you know, realizing that, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and have some conversations about this.
And that was a pretty in-depth conversation, too. Mm-hmm. There's concern from the council about the idea of going into somebody's home and, you know, fixing their basement, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there definitely is. So it was really helpful. And I think I mean, this is pretty consistent from the first time that this was presented to the council. We don't often talk about going on to private property and making an adjustment to someone's home to be able to handle stormwater.
Right.
And we're not talking about somebody's basement flooding because their sump pump didn't work. We're not talking about that. We're talking about stormwater runoff, which is traditionally handled by the city. That's not something that we ask individual property owners to really govern or take care of the pipes and how the water flows over the city within the city of Northfield. That is primarily handled by our city engineer department. And this is the first time that I think the council has had to wrestle with pros and cons. Do you make adjustments or modifications or do an acquisition, which other cities have done, mm-hmm. to private homes? Or is it, do you want to stay away from that and allow property owners to just handle it? I think the council was just really asking, what are the parameters? What are the triggers to when the city of Northfield needs to step in and do something? And the council was just asking for greater clarity on that and a greater policy or clearer policy statement on when the city of Northfield would take that approach. Yeah. And I think this is something that is new, and it might be something that is dealt with in the future. And so documenting it really clearly, I think, would be beneficial for all involved. Primarily, yeah, so clarity on policy direction and the parameters on when we would take this approach to modifying a home versus making adjustments to public infrastructure.
Right. Right. Do you anticipate actually putting a policy together in this regard, or are we just going to I would. What's the question I'm asking? Both a couple of the counselors had asked about let's really sit down and define a policy for something like this. Is that mm-hmm. in the works? Do we expect
I think it's a little early. Good question. I mean, what we need to be able to do is to clearly understand and articulate what the where the differentiation is, because like the mayor was saying, a lot of people deal with on-site stormwater issues right. that they have and put in, drains around your foundations and sump pumps. Those are really on-site issues. So if we're going to get into these, I think that we need to have some differentiation. Mm-hmm. That might be a policy, that might just be right. documentation through the approval. I think that's yet to be determined, but I think that's pretty clear. One thing that did change from November is with the council asking about some of these options, whether they could have more public improvements to them rather than private corrections. There were some substantial modifications where we're reducing the number of properties and improvements from the November meeting till last night, and then increase some of the city cost on the public infrastructure improvements. The cost is still just over $3 million that they're looking at it, but there was support by the council to move forward with our capital planning and the budget process for kind of the city drainage and infrastructure improvements of a little over $1.5 million, and then to continue in the future that if there's some way to differentiate these private improvements, I think that's when mm-hmm. we'd come back and have some discussions about those. But there definitely was support on moving forward with those.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, City Administrator Martig, Mayor Pownell, anything else you guys would like to discuss before we turn you loose?
We have a number of events coming up. Redistricting open house this evening at right. City Hall. Not a lot of changes, so we'll see how many people actually come. But I think that's good news that we didn't have a lot of disruption related to
great news. Yeah,
where our ward boundaries are. One slight modification of where voting is. We have some Highway 19 projects coming up that the public's available to go to this evening online. So if you go to our website, you can find out about that to learn about Highway 19 resurfacing project that's a few years out. And then tomorrow we have a follow-up water system study, open house and survey, March 3rd, 5:30 at City Hall. So tomorrow we have that. And then coming up, mark your calendars now for the, I lost that slide, State of the City event, Mayor. Yes. The date of that is
March 21st. It's on my calendar.
All right. That's good. I'm glad it's on yours. I don't think it's on ours. I think we'll be, what did they say, MIA missing in action, maybe.
It's your State of the City, Mayor. You have to be there. I'm sorry.
Okay, good.
All right.
At the Crackham White Center, Crackham Performance Theater, we will have in-person details to come, but great information. The mayor will deliver a speech on kind of what's happening with the city, and we have awards, and we have entertainment. So it'll be fun to have a celebration again with the community on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And in person, too.
In person.
Which is going to be fun.
Yes, it will be really good.
Yeah. All right. Mayor Pownell, City Administrator Ben Martig, thanks, you guys. We do appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to take a quick look at sports and some news from the Minnesota News Network, and we'll be back with local headlines after that.
For MNN Sports, I'm Kevin Falmas. The Lotto America jackpot is now estimated at $8.4 million. In St. Paul last night, the Wild